Howdy, it's Tyra, and welcome to another episode of Rockin' and Talkin'. I cannot believe that we are on episode 3, which is about halfway through season 1, which is fucking nuts that I have the ability to share these stories about these amazing people with you and get to just make them heard and seen more, which is really cool. Yeah. And this episode is no different. This is an episode featuring one of my dearest friends, George Carroll Wilson, also known as Polyman. I met him and his brother a year ago, literally only a couple days after I moved into the UK, specifically London, to start uni. And I feel that we're really lucky to have met each other and befriended each other. And now that has turned into an episode of a podcast, which is funny and cool. Anyway, this episode takes you through what he finds to be important regarding identity as a musician and what it means to be a multi-instrumentalist, as well as finding different ways that you can diversify your talents in entertainment and more. It's a really fun conversation. It was a fun conversation then, and even listening back to it as I edit things for this episode, it's still a really fun conversation. So if I enjoy it, I think you're going to enjoy it as well. I know you will. Anyway, it's time that you get stuck into the world of George.
Okay. So the questions are segmented into 3 different subjects, topics. Mm-hmm. So the first one is just all about background. So start off with, how would you describe what you do?
In general?
Yeah.
I think I describe myself as a multi-instrumentalist and a songwriting performer.
Okay. And within that, how would you describe your genre?
I'd say pop.
Pop.
But, like, from times gone by,
okay.
Like a collection of eras of pop is what has influenced me most.
Okay.
So yeah, not necessarily what's popular now, but mm-hmm. I've taken pretty much all my inspiration from pop music from like the 60s up until the 90s. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I feel like that's kind of where the cutoff is pretty much.
Okay. And going back a little bit, you said multi-instrumentalist, elaborate.
Okay.
So what do you do?
Well, I started on drums when I was about 6 or 7, and then it's pretty much all I played up until the age of about 9 or 10. Mm. I always played around with guitar and bass and ukulele mainly, because I couldn't really be bothered learning guitar chords, and Mum always taught me ukulele chords, so ukulele became my first stringed instrument that I was kind of proficient on.
Mm.
And then that was kind of it till I was about 14 when I decided to learn guitar, teach myself guitar, because I wanted to record covers and that kind of thing. And then I picked up bass about a year later or so, just for fun originally, because Mum bought an acoustic bass for Fen to play, but then I picked it up and really enjoyed it. And then when we went to the States in 2014, I played a lot of bass over there, which I think kind of locked that in as something that I really liked to play.
Mm.
And then I did a couple recordings with Mum when I was like 14 or 15. And then my first sort of professional bass gig was recording an album of Mum's when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been singing this whole time, like doing backing vocals when I was drumming, but then as I was playing guitar and writing my own songs, I was singing a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And then piano had been something that I'd always sort of toyed around with as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really given piano the same amount of attention as all the other instruments I've played,
mm-hmm.
but play a little bit of that. And then when I joined Bones and Jones, I would just started on percussion, because
mm-hmm.
You know, I could already do that kind
yeah.
of drumming. And if you played drums in Ocean Grove, you just wound up playing bongos and tambourine and shit anyway. But then I found a lap steel slide guitar at my parents' house, and thought that could be a cool thing to bring to Bones and Jones. Mm-hmm. So then I started playing lap steel, and I also found a saxophone, so I taught myself saxophone and then played that a little bit with Bones and Jones. But I'd say the core instruments that I play regularly and that I'm best at are drums, bass, guitar, and vocals.
Okay.
With a smattering of other things.
little devil.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you've partially answered one of my questions, but I want to kind of, like, pinpoint a little bit more, like... So the question is, how long have you done music, but you've given me lots of different ages?
Yeah.
So when would you say, like, was more of your official, like, start?
I'd say around 8 years old is when I started playing... like, you know, being invited on stage with mum or dad and playing a couple gigs with them.
Mm.
And then when I was 11, that's when my first band formed.
Mm.
And so then we started playing, like, professional gigs around Ocean Grove and Geelong and the coast. And then, yeah, so I'd say, like, I seriously got started when I was about 11 or 12.
Okay.
And then it really kind of started to pick up in my early teens.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And now, would you consider yourself a full-time or part-time musician?
I never really know how to answer that, because I imagine a full-time musician as being someone that, like, is always touring or is, like, working in music every day.
Mm.
And I don't, because I'm not always touring and don't always have gigs.
Mm.
But I'm always writing, kind of, and coming up with ideas and... you know, thinking about it all the time.
Mm.
So, I guess part-time, because it's not my, like, primary source of income, and it isn't what I do the most, because, you know, I'm at uni and all that stuff, so...
Yeah.
I guess part-time.
Okay. And just under those, like, the way that you would categorize full-time versus part-time.
Mm.
Okay. Great. Now, moving on to the next section, which is all about... success and what you think of it. So, are you living on or off music?
Like money wise?
Yeah.
Absolutely off.
And if you don't mind me asking, how else are you making income?
Well, now I've just started getting Oz study payments, which is the main way I'm getting money. I sort of jointly own an apartment in St Kilda with Mum and Fen, and so I get a bit of rent money from that. But yeah, otherwise that's pretty much it. And then I do get a bit of money from gigs. Like, I'd say I'd average maybe $300 a month from shows. Like that. If I have like one or two gigs a month, that's around what it winds up being.
Okay. And out of, like, just out of curiosity, out of the gigs that you do play, how many of them are paying?
Pretty much all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, just to varying degrees of sweet or not sweet deals.
Okay.
But yeah, unless it's a fundraiser, I always insist I'm getting paid for gigs.
Oh. Do you have a bass on?
It's usually 200.
Okay.
If it really can't be swung, then I'd settle for like 150. But at this stage, I don't really want to settle for 150.
That's fair. Hmm. Okay, cool. And then what are three things... what are three things that you consider makes a musician successful?
What kind of success? Like,
whatever you like, just off of your opinion, whatever you think success is, and what are like the top three things that come to mind when you think of, like, oh my gosh, this musician is successful.
Yeah. I suppose playing like sellout tours, whatever size that may be, like, whether it's like, you know, if you're playing 30 dates on a tour and they're all at pubs or they're all at sort of medium-sized venues, if they're all sold out, I'd see that as, like, that's quite successful. That tour with the Chats I did was a pretty good example of what I would consider a successful band,
yeah.
in that they could afford to accommodate everybody, like, get everyone travel and, you know, have us taken care of at the venue, whether it's like a rider backstage or a meal ticket or something like that,
yeah.
like everyone's taken care of, and all the shows are attended really well in like pretty decent sized venues. But then it, like, professionally, I'd say, well, yeah, professional success for me, or like music success, is like being the person that people call upon because they know that you're like capable and reliable and are enjoyed in a musical space, which I feel like I'm sort of getting to, which is really nice. Like I'm being asked more and more to play with people that I haven't normally played with because they've either seen me play or heard good things about me, and for me that feels like success.
Yeah.
Even if it isn't sort of lucrative or, you know, isn't like a huge step up career-wise, it's like it's just nice to know that I'm seen as someone that people want to play with or have in their band for a time. And the last one, I'd say it's like being able to use it to do other things. Like if music is going really well, you can get into like other fields like fashion or film or
I see what you mean.
That kind of thing. Or like a studio, something like that. Yeah, so I think like, yeah, leveraging the sort of resources and the power you have by being a successful musician to then do other stuff, work in other disciplines.
Cool. Oh, I love all of that. Okay. And then you kind of answered a bit of what my follow-up question was going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are there any experiences or achievements that made you feel that you are successful?
Yeah, I think when my first album came out, like my first record.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of those moments, like when the first, my first band's album came out, that felt like a successful moment, and then when my album came out, that felt like a successful moment, and my first, well, the album launch, that felt really good, felt like something was happening, and when I did that tour with the Chats in February, and we were playing all these crazy gigs with like thousands of people there, that felt pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's like I'm doing like serious session work and playing some really great gigs just because people like me and know that I can play bass. Yeah. So that was cool.
Yeah. And I'm just curious because I know your album came out in 2020, right?
Yeah.
How did that go, just like knowing you had COVID and everything?
Ah, terrible. Yeah. Like the launch itself was kind of shit. It was marred by this goddamn DJ that was booked on like back to back with my launch. So we had the room, and I didn't know this until we got there on the night, but we had the room from like 8 to 11 or something. And so there's the two support bands played for half an hour each, and then I think we played for like 45.
Okay.
And in our last song, someone from the venue like came up to the front of the stage, or maybe it was the DJ himself, and was just like, hey, you gotta stop because we need to set up the decks and shit. And I was just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And so then not only did we have to get off really quick, which meant that I couldn't sell any records, I couldn't talk to anybody, I couldn't like be there because I was just getting gear off as fast as possible. They also kicked everyone out, which meant that we had to pack down the records and everything. And so the whole night got cut short for what it could have been, which stung particularly bad because we, like, I'd lined up, you know, 4 or 5 gigs around the state to support the record, and they all got shut down because of COVID. So, yeah, it was a pretty disappointing experience all up.
Yeah.
Which which is unfortunate, but yeah, got to do some fun makeup gigs and that kind of thing. But yeah, I do wish that the album release sort of and the follow up stuff was, you know, went down differently.
Yeah, which makes sense. That's unfortunate. So, what did you do during COVID, like for music and everything?
Well, I was still writing, and we got, like, I was invited to perform on a couple of live stream events. So there were two in Melbourne, Delivered Live and, like, State of Victoria, which was through Mushroom. And they were cool because, you know, it was like a full professional studio setup, and that was really fun because I hadn't done anything like that before. And there was a lot of good response from those. Like, I think we got shown to a lot more people. But kind of once those were done, it was just sort of touch and go with, like getting to play a gig in between lockdowns. But I got to play some really fun shows when you know, there was, like, a week or something where lockdowns weren't happening, and then I was like, oh, my God, there's a gig. And then, like, the next day, lockdown would happen again. So, yeah, it just felt like I kept barely squeezing gigs in. But otherwise, like, because by that point I moved back down to Mum's house, and she and Fen and I sort of started up this musical thing, which was just kind of a way to pass time and to try to cheer people up on Instagram and Facebook and whatever, where we would just record covers together. It, like, acoustic, and we'd wear cowboy hats and talk shit. And, yeah, so that ended up developing into something. Like, we got asked to play, like, a handful of shows doing that thing, which is really weird.
That's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we ended up playing at the Palais, supporting this, like, sister duo named Vicar and Linda Bull.
Cool.
And it was a big gig, and we got asked to do Mariachi El Clifto as the support band. So that kept me busy.
Yeah,
between those two, and I think there was a couple of gigs with Fen as well, like live stream events and all that sort of thing. And I organized a couple of live stream events, which went pretty well. And then I got into the habit of recording videos of myself performing my whatever song I'd just written.
Yeah.
And that was fun. So, yeah, I was kind of just, I had to get creative with ways to still engage with people and show people new stuff that wasn't at a gig, because that wasn't possible.
Yeah, just found alternative means of doing so.
Yes.
Cool. And that leads perfectly into what is happening now with your music career.
I'm kind of focusing a lot more on other people's projects or bands where I don't have as much of a central role. Like drumming with Fen and picking up a couple sort of session gigs here and there. Like I've taken up bass with this new project for a musician named Van Walker. And yeah, just kind of doing the odd thing here and there. But as far as Polyman is concerned, it's mainly just been, like, the odd support here and there. Yeah, and kind of not waiting to be asked, but I haven't been lining up my own gigs. I've just been sort of letting them come, you know, because otherwise I'm just writing or doing all the other stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then within that, what is one current short-term and one current long-term goal that you have for yourself?
Current short-term goal is to find members for a new band. And long-term goal is to release the album that I recorded years ago that I feel like is just... is something that's kind of getting in the way of me feeling like I can keep progressing. Because I'm writing a lot of new stuff and recording heaps of new stuff, and, you know, people want to hear it. officially. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I kind of can't until I've released the other record. Mm. That's kind of the long-term goal.
Okay. When...
Mix that and get it out.
Yeah. In a perfect world, when would you like to see that actually happen?
Both of them?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the band members thing... It's hard to say because like uni is so hectic and I feel like I'm already at max capacity.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess now, like, it would be really nice if, you know, an entire band's worth of people could just rock up at my door and be like, oh, cool, all right, this is good. But the album thing, kind of whenever, because I don't want to do a physical copy for that one.
Nah,
just because it costs a lot and it's effort I don't really want to expend on a record that I don't really feel very attached to.
I see.
Because I wrote it all so long ago and recorded it long ago. And, you know, I've sort of personally moved on from it, which isn't to say I dislike it or anything, but I find it hard to sort of want to invest a lot of money and time and all the stuff that's required of a record, like a physical record, into something that I don't feel that passionately about anymore.
That's fair.
The goal is just to mix it and finish off a couple things and then just release it digitally, maybe on Bandcamp as well.
Mm.
And that's kind of the plan.
Okay.
That's what I've been saying for the last like 4 years.
Yeah. It'll happen.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
timing.
Yeah.
And how has your career changed over time though?
I've definitely grown more selective of the kind of gigs I want to play and the kind of bands I want to play with. Which is nice because it's like I don't have that sort of. I don't really have the hunger that a really young musician has, like someone in their sort of late teens and early 20s. But it's kind of cool because it's been replaced with, knowing what my worth is as a musician and knowing what I want to do. And also going back to the success questions, like wanting to do things that feel like I'm... I'm putting energy into those kinds of projects, you know, whether it's personal success or financial success or whatever. Being more selective in order to conserve energy to give it to the right places.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, I'd just say yes to everything and then, you know, would sort of feel burnt out and not have much to show for it, like personally or professionally.
Yeah.
I feel a lot less certain about my career now than I used to, or at least I think about it more. I'm considering how hard it is now, whereas before I feel like I was just doing it and wasn't really concerned about that. And I don't know whether it's just because, like, you know, more time has passed and I'm considering that I'm not getting any younger in an industry that is, you know, that really values youth and freshness and all that shit. Not that I feel that, like, I haven't been made to feel like I'm sort of getting too old to do it or whatever, because, you know, I just saw this fantastic drag cabaret performer named Ruben Kay the other night, and he's, like, 39, and I think just kind of getting big or getting a lot of success. I know that that's not really an issue, but I guess I'm thinking about it more. But I guess with my solo stuff, it's changed a lot in the sense that I haven't had a band for 3 years or so. And sort of being in a state of getting used to that, but also not wanting that, like wanting a band, but being used to not having a band.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah, I'd say that's kind of the change. Okay. Those are the major changes.
Now moving on to the next section, which is all about being a musician here in the city, which I think was really interesting the way that you were just like answering that question about how your career has changed. The first question in here is, what are three challenges that you, what you've been experiencing being a musician in Melbourne?
I think sort of oversaturation. And feeling as though I don't really fit into the scene. Like, there aren't many bands that are doing the, like, playing the kind of music I play and presenting it in the way that I present. So, yeah, struggling with feeling like an outsider a bit, but also trying to see that as a benefit. Because, you know, if I was similar to every other band, like all the punk bands and all the sort of country bands or whatever is hot at the moment, I'd be a lot less unique. So I kind of like that, but it is sort of a challenge at times when I feel like I don't really know where my crowd is or who my crowd is. And audiences are hard. They're like, I feel like Melbourne audiences are always kind of a challenge. Unless you get lucky and just get a really good group of people, you know, at a really good gig or something like that. But I think generally Melbourne audiences are pretty hard to win over or get excited about your stuff, unless they're friends or something. Which I'm lucky enough to have a lot of friends that like to come to gigs. But, yeah, I'd say those are the three major things.
It's rather interesting. So, like, when you're talking about scenes and everything, like, what do you think the expectation is then of, like, what music scenes are, like, the ones you, like, are more popular or whatever?
What do you mean, expectations?
Because you said, like, not really fitting in. Like, what do you think the actual expectations are?
Well, I guess to, you know, play that sort of, like, post-punk or punk kind of stuff with, like, you know, the uniform is mullets and little T-shirts and everyone's screaming and, you know, yelling about Centrelink or something, which isn't bad. Like, it's not that, that sort of music is inherently bad. There's heaps of good bands that do it, but I think just the number of them is kind of overwhelming. So yeah, not fitting into that camp, because I don't want to, you know, I don't write that kind of music and don't want to present it in that way. But just knowing that that is kind of the majority of bands around at the moment, with, like, some exceptions. Yeah, I guess that's...
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, it does. And I find what you said to be really interesting. And even with, like, the thing about audiences. So how... If you were to... I guess, like, how would you figure out, like, where your people are, like, what?
Well, yeah, I'm not really sure how to figure that out. I feel like the scene in Melbourne is so kind of fractured. There's not sort of, I don't know if I'm just out of touch or what, but I feel like there's not as much of a sort of gig culture as there used to be. Like, people will go to a gig specifically for one artist rather than go out all the time to just see whatever. So I don't really know who is out there that wants to see me specifically, but I know there's, like, there's a handful of people who have seen me play and have liked it and then, you know, come back again. But I don't really know. Like, I don't know how that happened. I think they came for the headliner and then saw me supporting and then were like, oh, he's cool. And then, you know, came to my next gig or something like that. So I guess that's a pretty natural way of having developed sort of a following or a scene.
Yeah, just, like, finding the right, I guess, like, people that are on the show list and hoping that, like, it pulls people in. That's interesting. Okay, cool. And then next thing is, What are three ways that being a musician in Melbourne has helped you?
Definitely made more friends than I would have.
Yeah.
Just because music is such a social thing,
mm-hmm.
and if you're playing it, the people you meet, you know, like you already have a sort of shared interest, which fundamentally is just music in general.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, then you can talk about what you love about it, and what you love performing, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've met so many people that I would never have met otherwise.
Yeah.
And people I really admire and have been a fan of in the past. Making friends is a really good one. Seeing places I never would have seen,
mm-hmm.
whether it's like touring with my mum, you know, occasionally,
yeah.
where we've gone to the most remote towns in Australia that I would never have even heard of, let alone gone to, but
yeah.
really enjoyed, because it's like, you know, you can see stars for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And you stay in these really weird places and meet all these really lovely people. I guess just as a, it's like, it helps with my sense of identity, I suppose, because it, you know, I see myself as a musician and getting to do that pretty regularly. I don't know, it makes me feel like it's a good reason to be in this city.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are three strong things.
Thanks.
Yeah. and you kind of answered this one a bit, but I'm going to ask you to kind of, like, elaborate on this a bit more. So the question is, do you think Melbourne has a scene? You said yes, but, like, could you describe it?
Yeah, I'd say it's, like, very specific. So I think, yeah, people go to see specific bands, not just
yep.
any bands.
Mm.
But there's a few really good venues that always, you know, always put on cool gigs.
Mm.
And generally attracts good people that are, you know, into the music and have a dance and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know, it can feel very clicky, the Melbourne scene. Like, if you're not playing the right kind of music and don't sort of look a certain way
yeah.
or behave a certain way, then you won't really be accepted by a certain demographic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And what do you mean by, like, not accepted by a certain demographic? Do you mean not just with, like, other muses, but could also be with, like, people who attend?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And does living in this city give you a sustainable path for your career? Why or why not?
I think to an extent.
Okay.
But I think there's a real trap of bands who, like, never really leave Melbourne.
Because
you see them on the same sort of, like, playing the same venues and doing the same thing for years and years.
Yeah.
And they don't really seem to expand much further than it.
Because
there are so many places you could play in Melbourne and, you know, so many things you could do here. You can get a bit sort of comfortable, I guess. But, yeah, I think so. Because, I have a lot of friends who have started in Melbourne and have since gone on to do Europe tours and American tours and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, it is a really good place, and people look to Melbourne a lot for, you know, up-and-coming bands and artists and stuff, so it attracts the people who aren't musicians necessarily but play other roles in the music world. So I think Melbourne is a really great place to start. And it's sort of the fact that it is so oversaturated just kind of means that you have to just try a bit harder to get noticed and get people interested,
because
they have such a huge choice.
Yeah.
It's like you really have to convince people to be invested in your stuff, which is kind of annoying, but I think that's what makes the difference between a really good band here and sort of every other band here.
Okay.
Because there are so many.
Yeah.
When you see a really good one, it's
like such a treat.
Yeah. Okay. And then in general, like kind of talking about like, you know, people getting more like it's super saturated, which in general we're seeing this problem, not just like with how many musicians exist here, but just in general with like the amount of people that can upload things on like Spotify.
Yeah.
And all that. What do you think could help change, like, if you think anything could be changed to help kind of push people out to get more visibility against kind of that saturation?
I think more effort with, like, stagecraft and the visual side of it. Because I think that's a really underrated aspect in the music scene in general, but you know, I feel like the Melbourne uniform for a musician is usually like a t-shirt and a cap and like, you know, trendy loose jeans or something. Not to sound too much like a bitch, but yeah, I feel like it's a pretty underrated aspect of what makes a really great band so fun to watch is how much they're giving into every aspect of it. Like that's what was so inspiring about watching the chats night after night is that they would go so hard every night and would be like leaping and, you know, pulling weird faces and really getting into it and really putting on a show, not just playing, you know, good punk music. They cared a lot about every facet of it. And I think that's what people respond to so much with them is that they obviously really care about the music they write, but also the way they perform it. And yeah, I think that's what gets quite boring in the Melbourne scene is that everyone seems kind of content to just write songs and just sort of play them and not perform them. So that's why when you see a band that really does go for it, it's like so special because it's just a bit more than the average, but that little bit more leaves such a huge impact that, yeah, I wish more bands did. It's just like such a wasted opportunity. It's like they're missing 50% of what could be a really cool thing.
And do you, like people end up like getting that type of like, you know, building up their musicianship skills? Is that just through, I'm assuming through experience, or do you think anyone like, or is that just like through feedback too?
Probably both. Yeah, I feel like my old bassist is a good example of that because he was pretty new to bass when he joined my band, the first version of my band. And, you know, he knew a lot about bass, but there was a lot he didn't know just because he hadn't played for very long, and especially in, like, a band context, which I think is where you do all of your really important learning because you can learn as much as you want alone, but it's not until you apply it in a practical way that you'll know what's working and what isn't. And so, yeah, he and I talked a lot about, like, he wanted to know if I had feedback for him, and I'd say, you know, yeah, well, you've doing this, which isn't really gelling, but this was really strong. And could you maybe try this and see how that goes? And yeah, he said that he learned a lot from that experience, like more than when he was just sort of studying music and not playing it very much. Because it was like practical and sort of on the fly. And you had to make those adjustments quick and learn quick. Yeah. And I think that's where someone progresses really fast is when you have to learn something fast and then apply it, you know, the next night or something.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, cool. Thank you. Do you have any questions for me?
I think so.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. And we're all done.
You're welcome, Tara. Yeah. That was chill.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, I never let you all down, and I told you it was going to be a fun conversation, and I was right. I hope that you had lots of fun listening to this chat as much as I did while I was interviewing George. And I also hope that you had lots of laughs when we laughed and that you took something away from this conversation in some way, shape, or form. There's a lot of really good bits here to take away from that could lead to some type of inspiration regarding reputation, stagecraft, finding what it means to have your own brand, and so much more. And it really helps that George has had lots of cool opportunities in his life and also as a musician to really make sense of some of this and also have an idea of how he wants to move forward and also develop himself in so many other ways, which is really cool. And I hope that you take some inspiration from that and that it shows you a bit of what's going on in Melbourne and also what's going on with his career and so much more that leads you into finding out something new about your career, about the city, or even just the way that you want to go about things. And I also highly encourage you to check out his incredible tunes. You can head to the link in the description to listen to his debut album. And also, I encourage you to follow him on Instagram. That way, you can listen to some of his demos that are there, but also get the 411 on what he has going on. And there's quite a few things that are coming up that I really encourage you to get in the know about. Once again, let me know your thoughts and questions about this episode by heading over to the pod's Instagram page at Rockin' and Talkin' Pod and leaving a comment under the post that goes with this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back for more Rockin' and Talkin' in 2 weeks. See you then, stay well, and keep rockin'.